This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
All you evolved humans. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. I'm a survivor of the fittest. This show is produced by the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, a national organization of atheists and agnostics, working to educate the public about the views of non-theists and to keep state and church separate. And that reminds me, we're talking about evolution. And Charles Darwin, whenever I see these evangelists on TV or evangelists saying inaugural prayers who do not believe in evolution, looks to me like they are survivors of the fattest.
So today we are going to, as Dan said, devote our show to Charles Darwin. And that is for a very good reason, because he was born on February 12th, 1809. And what does that make it, Dan?
2009 minus 1809, 200 exactly.
Yeah, it's the bicentennial of Charles Darwin's birth. It's a big deal. And it's also the 150th anniversary of the publication, the initial original publication of Origin of Species. And I think that was in November of 150 years ago.
That's nice. 1859. It's nice that he did it that way, round numbers.
Right. So this is the year of Darwin.
Our guest today, later in the show, will be the reporter Laurie Lebo, who's an author of a wonderful book. It's called The Devil in Dover, an insider's story of dogma versus Darwin in small town America. And you might remember that Dover, Pennsylvania, was where that big intelligent design trial took place.
And it actually is a double bicentennial on February 12th, because Abraham Lincoln and Charles Darwin, believe it or not, share the same year and the same birthday. And so we will be having a whole year to celebrate Darwin's life and teachings. And we just want to talk a little bit about him today before we go to our interview. Remind you who Charles Darwin was. He prepared for the church at Cambridge, but his passion, of course, was natural history. And during his work as a naturalist for the Beagle, which was the naturalist ship that he went on and went to the Galapagos, he began documenting and formulating his theory, so-called, of evolution. At the time he wrote the monumental On the Origin of Species, 1859, he still accepted the first cause argument for the existence of a God and gradually threw off his religious beliefs. In his Descent of Man that came out in 1871, Darwin wrote, "For my part, I would as soon be descended from a baboon as from a savage who delights to torture his enemies, treats his wives like slaves, and is haunted by the grossest superstitions." He wrote the Reverend J. Fordyce on July 7th, 1879, that an agnostic would be the most correct description of my state of mind. Darwin penned his memoirs between the ages of 67 and 73, finishing the main text in 1876, and these memoirs were published posthumously in 1887 by his family under the title Life and Letters of Charles Darwin. But guess what?
They took out some things.
Yes, they were bolderized. His hardest-hitting views on religion were excised, and only in 1958 did Darwin's granddaughter, Nora Barlow, publish his autobiography with the original omissions restored. And Dan, one of these is one of those omissions that was restored that Darwin wrote about his views. Why don't you read that?
"I can indeed hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. For if so, the plain language of the text seems to show that the men who did not believe, and this would include my father, brother, and almost all my best friends, will be everlastingly punished. And this is a damnable doctrine."
And of course, Dan, you want to talk a little bit about the science of Darwin? I talked about his free thought views.
Well, of course, when Darwin was young, he was pre-Darwinian. And and before Origin of the Species, you know, Thomas Jefferson, a lot of them had a sort of a first cause, sort of a deistic idea, because they didn't have a mechanism for how did life evolve.
An explanation.
Although people like Jefferson and Thomas Paine were what you might call practical atheists. They lived their lives without religion, but they had some kind of views. But there were evolutionary ideas floating around, the idea of evolution before Charles Darwin, but no one had come up with a mechanism. How does it actually work? People suspected and knew things were changing, but what is going on? And of course, his great contribution was the idea of natural selection, which was some people later called the survival of the fittest. And, species overproduce and compete for resources, and only those that are fit enough in that particular, it doesn't mean they're better, it just means they happen to be naturally more fit for the particular environment they're in. Those are the ones that are more successful. And you and I and every listener of the show is a direct descendant of a successful ancestor who did make it while many others did not. Not just individuals, but of course entire species went extinct. So every one of us comes from a long line of ancestors who had sex at least once.
Well, that's rather scandalous. And what else did Darwin contribute in explaining how we got here?
Well, he didn't know about genetics, of course. Mendel came up with the idea of genetics, but his views were hidden for a long time. But he knew that there had to be something there, and that all of our traits can be shared with all the animals. And what he showed is that evolution... What Darwin showed, in which Mendel, and then now today genetics, Darwin would have loved to have known about genetics, genes, and DNA, is that evolution is not a ladder. It's not like some progressive step-forward thing. Evolution is a bush. And if you look at the ends of a bush or a tree, no one thinks that we came from chimpanzees, although a lot of creationists like to say, I didn't come from a monkey. But no scientist says that. What Darwin showed is that we all, if you follow the twigs at the end of a bush or a tree back, you will come to a common ancestor. And then if you follow that back, that goes to a common ancestor. If you follow all of these twigs back, they come down to a trunk. And so that from so simple of a beginning, Darwin said, we can show how such a wondrous diversity of life on this planet has evolved.
And there's nobody like Charles Darwin. So to mark this bicentennial year, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is erecting new billboards to honor Darwin, not dogma. And we're celebrating and calling attention to the year of Darwin by unveiling a new billboard message that says, Praise Darwin. Evolve beyond belief. And this message has debuted in Madison, Wisconsin, on Regent Street near the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. And we also have billboards going up in time for Darwin's February 12th birthday bicentennial in two very significant other locations, which is Dayton, Tennessee, and Dover, Pennsylvania.
And Dayton, Tennessee was the site, of course, of the infamous or famous 1925 Scopes monkey trial. And Dover, Pennsylvania is the town, the hamlet, where an attempt to promote intelligent design by the local school board was quashed by a federal judge in a historic 2005 decision. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in today's show. And we had some trouble in Dayton, Tennessee. We couldn't find anybody in town who would take our billboard. At first,
in Dover, for that matter. Just outside, the outskirts.
Some of the companies in Dayton were eager to do business because they wanted to do business.
Yeah, until they found out what we wanted to say.
Yeah, then they didn't return our phone calls. We finally found a company in Chattanooga who owned some billboards close to town.
And this is a beautiful billboard message. You can go to ffrf.org, the news release section, to see it. But it's designed by Adams Outdoor Company, and it utilizes the signature stained glass window motif that the foundation has adopted for some of our artwork and our billboards. It's kind of ironical, but it's pretty. And we have a King James biblical style, and we have the big P, Praise Darwin, and that's on purpose, of course. But then we also have that very iconic image of Charles Darwin right on the billboard. So it's really beautiful. And the phrase evolved.
Darwin had a beard and God had a beard. So how do you explain that?
The phrase evolved beyond belief is directed at the 50% of Americans who still, to this day, to their shame, reject evolution and accept creationism. This is the Genesis myth or legend that the earth was created out of nothing by a god less than 10,000 years ago. And some of them believe 6,000 years ago.
So we want to praise Darwin to give credit to human intelligence, not the supernatural, for asking the question, where do we come from? And who greater to honor than Charles Darwin? And his 200th birthday is in a few days on February the 12th.
And we had fun coming up with the slogan. We had some suggested by Phil Appleman, who's the Darwin scholar and poet. And we're going to read one of his poems in the second segment. He's written Darwin's Ark poems, and Norton Critical Edition of Darwin Anthology was what he edited. But he suggested honk if you're evolving, creationism, just say no. And I liked this one, dude, God is just a theory. And this one.
Evolution, when you've outgrown the missionary position.
And Dan, you suggested don't start the evolution without me.
And then the one I really liked, but it got vetoed by everybody, was non-belief is the natural selection.
So we'll go out of this segment with just a little snippet from the movie Inherit the Wind. This is the character playing Clarence Darrow talking about Darwin.
Darwin took us forward to a hilltop from where we could look back and see the way from which we came. But for this insight and for this knowledge, we must abandon our faith in the pleasant poetry of Genesis.
Spencer Tracy quoting Clarence Darrow. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk about Darwin and interview the journalist Laurie Lebo, author of the book The Devil in Dover.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're celebrating the year of Darwin, which kicks off this month with the bicentennial of the birth of Charles Darwin on February 12, 1809.
And there's another anniversary here. Philip Appleman, who's a life member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation and an esteemed poet laureate of humanism and of science, who successfully integrates art with science. The 25th anniversary of the first publication of his collection of poems about Darwin is called Darwin's Ark, Poems by Philip Appleman.
University of Indiana Press.
They have released it, and in honor of Charles Darwin's birthday, they re-released the book, which has a number of wonderful poems in it. I just want to read one of them. It's called The Ant, from Darwin's Bestiary, a section in the book. And, you know, in the Bible it says, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Well, listen to this. The ant, Darwin reminded us, defies all simple-mindedness. Take nothing, says the ant, on faith, and never trust a simple truth. The PR men of bestiaries eulogize for centuries this busy little paragon, nature's proletarian. But look here, Darwin said, some ants make slaves of smaller ants and end exploiting in their peonages the sweating brows of their tiny drudges. Thus the ant speaks out of both sides of its mealy little mouth. Its example is extolled to the workers of the world, but its habits also preach the virtues of the idle rich.
And here's Words, Intelligent Design, written as a song by that poet, Philip Appleman, put to music by my co-host, Dan Barker, called Intelligent Design.
Your eyes have seen a blurry scene that's only known to man. Your optic nerves are backward and have been since time began. That's what the preachers tell you is God's very special plan. Intelligent design. Glory, glory, hallelujah. The great designer knows what's due ya. Nothing else can stick it to ya like intelligent design. You wish a guy's urethra did the jobs that were proposed. Both lover's clout and water spout is what you had supposed. Alas, the great designer squeezed a prostate round your hose. Intelligent design. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Nowhere does that Bible clue ya that your glands would soon subdue ya. Intelligent design. Your tummy's sick, your heart goes tick, your hips are giving in. Childbirth is a horror, 'cause your pelvis is too thin. When your appendix ruptures, the designer only grins. Intelligent design. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Making do will have to do ya. Flim flammers cook this up to screw ya. Intelligent design. Intelligent design.
Intelligent design. The words by Philip Appleton. That's Dan Barker. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan from Free Thought Radio. We'll be back. Interview journalist Laurie Lebo, author of The Devil in Dover, an insider's story of dogma versus Darwin in small-town America.
About Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Our guest today is Laurie Lebo. She decided to become a journalist because of the 1979 nuclear accident at Three Mile Island, which is just 5 miles from her home. She and her family had to flee, along with thousands of other central Pennsylvania residents. And Laurie never forgot journalism's important role in those days. She's been a small-town Pennsylvania reporter for 20 years. 10 years ago, she returned home to York County, where she worked at the York Dispatch and Sunday News. Part of a team of investigative reporters working to solve two unsolved civil rights era murders, she helped unravel the accepted history of her town. Laurie Lebo has won numerous state and national awards. In 2004, as the York Daily Record's education reporter, she covered the intelligent design First Amendment battle. That case not only challenged her beliefs in what constitutes fair and balanced journalism, but it made her reevaluate the role that religion has long played in her life. Her book is called The Devil in Dover, an insider's story of dogma versus Darwin in small town America. And that book is a result of that whole issue.
So we're delighted to have you on our show today, Laurie Lebo. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Are we saying your name right? Lebo?
Lebo, yes.
Lebo, okay.
Yes, Pennsylvania Dutchie name.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that case to remind people who have already forgotten this was the big intelligent design battle?
Yes. Just a quick funny thing. Somebody mentioned it to me the other day that to a lot of students that this is now history, which is kind of funny. It feels like yesterday. What happened was in 2004, this school board in Dover, Pennsylvania, which is a small town in south central Pennsylvania, was looking for a new biology book for their students. The school board objected to the except to the one that the teachers recommended, the biology book, because it was, quote, laced with Darwinism.
Horrors.
Yes. All the way through, apparently.
Imagine.
And what happened was when the head of the curriculum committee, a man named Bill Buckingham, spoke about the need to teach alongside evolution something else like creationism. His remarks sort of touched off a big controversy in the town, and when it became a national issue is when the school board had changed their remarks to talking about intelligent design. And they inserted it into the biology curriculum, and that was the first, that became the first constitutional test case of the phrase intelligent design in public school science class.
And hopefully it's the case that has quashed it totally. We don't hear that anymore, do we?
No, but as Eugenie Scott of the National Center for Science Education says, creationists are proof of evolution. They keep evolving their message.
Right.
So it's now changed on to other subjects.
They'll come up with some other phrases. They did not appeal that loss either.
No, they did not. And the reason why it could never be appealed was it was immediately after the trial had finished, but before Judge Jones had issued his decision, there was an election. And the public, after listening to this trial going on in Harrisburg, threw out the pro-intelligent design board members and replaced them with board members who opposed the teaching of intelligent design in science class. So by the time Judge Jones's decision came out, there was no reason. The board supported his decision. If that makes sense.
And they would have the authority to make the appeal.
Exactly.
And they didn't want to.
Yes, so. It would only be the school board's decision.
Now, when you at the beginning of your book, you sort of follow one of the science teachers who was, or one of the students was, there was a painting that was up in one of the classrooms.
Yes.
And tell us that story, because that was sort of the beginning of it.
There was a student, and I got to talk to him. His name's Zach, and he was a student who he really enjoyed art, and he decided to paint this mural and give it as a gift to the science department, and it was the of man evolving from his ape-like ancestors, and what happened was a janitor in the school objected to it because one of our earlier ancestors didn't have clothes on.
And, imagine that.
Yes. And
they were nudists.
Yes, he was. And what really bothered him is because he had a granddaughter who was going to be taking the class soon. As he described it to me, and using a Pennsylvania Dutch phrase, he said, "You can see the guy's schwanz hanging there."
The janitor wants to clean up the curriculum, right?
He does. So he got very upset by that, and then one day he took it out in this artwork that the student had done, and gave to the science department, and took it out into the parking lot and set it on fire.
Wow.
So that was sort of the beginning that something was going very wrong in that school district, huh?
Yes. Well, what really showed that something was amiss was when the head of the science department objected to this, and she was basically, Bertha Spahr, wonderful woman, was told to mind her own business. And that's when Alan Bonsall, who was the president of the school board at the time, when he saw a picture of this mural, he realized that students were getting the idea that perhaps we did descend from animals.
Wow, from ape-like ancestors.
Yes, we were not created in God's own image.
No, Laurie, what's so fascinating, I think, about your book on this, and there's been two or three other books, but
yes.
You were a local, this is, the subtitle is An Insider's Story of Dogma versus Darwin in Small-Town America. And you had covered the area. Did you grow up outside of Dover?
Yes. It's Bald Hill. This one mountain called Bald Hill is what separates me from that school district. So I grew up in a neighboring school district. And, so I know the people. I know the area. You know, as a matter of fact, when I was working on the book, I started to become sort of protective almost, because I would watch all these outsiders, you know, the national spotlight coming in. I mean, I felt this, you know, I know these people. These are like the church ladies.
And they knew you too, right?
These people. Yes, many of them did.
But you were not there at the original school board meetings that became part of the lawsuit, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was the education reporter, but because we have, oh gosh, so many different school districts in York County, that was stringers or correspondents were covering the initial meetings.
So those initial meetings became very important in the actual trial.
Very much so.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. Well, as I said about Bill Buckingham, he talked about creationism. And at the school board meetings, and he was joined by the board president, Alan Bonsall, and another school board member who were saying that you can teach creationism without violating the First Amendment. What happened, though, there were two reporters from two separate newspapers who saw this that day, and they wrote down their remarks about creationism, and they reported on it. A month later, the school board members stopped talking about creationism and they started talking about intelligent design. But they never asked for any corrections in these newspaper articles. And at that point, once they started talking about intelligent design, I got involved in it. And they never told me that anybody had denied that they were saying creationism. As a matter of fact, they talked to me about how this was a very good compromise, intelligent design, between biology and their belief that God created everything in his own image.
And the reason this was important is that there was the Aguiar, how do you say that?
Aguillard.
Aguiar
versus Aguillard.
In which the Supreme Court, was that 87?
That was 89.
89 had said, you know, you can't do creationism in the public schools.
Yes.
So
U.S. Supreme Court ruled that creationism had no business in science class and was unconstitutional because it was religion.
So they had let the cat out of the bag when they were saying the word creationist, and then they realized their mistake and tried to backpedal and say, oh, we're talking about intelligent design.
Exactly. What happened was a law firm, the Thomas More Law Center, came in and said, hey, you know, if you were talking about intelligent design, we'll represent you for free, and basically promised them that they would be foot soldiers in the culture war and, you know, change the way science is taught in the public schools and get God back into schools.
Because partly the intelligent design movement was looking for a case like this.
Very much so. As a matter of fact, the Thomas More Law Center had been shopping around for just this case. And the Discovery Institute, which denies that they've ever pushed for the teaching of intelligent design in science class, even though they've published documents, their own documents say how to teach intelligent design in public school science class, they had been doing it too. But at one point, the Discovery Institute, which is the leading intelligent design proponents in the country, probably backpedaled on this and tried to get out.
Now, this trial was such a huge thing, and I never knew this till I read your book, that Bruce Springsteen actually wrote a song dedicated, I guess, to...
I think I need to clarify. He had written that song back in the early 80s.
Oh.
However, he started playing it again because the Dover case had made his radar.
And it was called Part Man, Part Monkey. We have a little excerpt. Why don't we listen to it?
Well, God make man a breath of holy fire, or did he crawl on a vat of muck and mire? You can ask me, mister, because I know. Tell them soul-sucking preachers to come on down and see. Pardon man, pardon monkey, baby, that's me.
And that's the boss, Bruce Springsteen. The song is called Part Man, Part Monkey.
And Laura, you got to meet Bruce Springsteen, right?
I'm sorry?
You said you got to meet him because of this.
Yes, as well as some of the plaintiffs in the case and the attorneys.
Well, that must have been fun.
Yes.
I like that phrase. Tell them soul preachers to come on down and see part man, part monkey. That's me. Now, I know a lot of the plaintiffs in the case were religious.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that, and some of them were not. But when we come back, we'll continue talking with Lori Lebo. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And she was a local journalist who covered the Dover Intelligent Design trial. Her book is called The Devil in Dover, an insider story of dogma versus Darwin in small town America.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
It's evolution, baby. That's Pearl Jam with the song Do the Evolution. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're talking with Laurie Lebo, author of the book The Devil in Dover, an insider story of dogma versus Darwin in small town America.
And there's so much to talk about with you, Laurie. Just really briefly, you tell the story of some of the main plaintiffs. You want to briefly talk about the Kitzmillers.
Sure. Tammy Kitzmiller?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, her daughter was the first student to, of the plaintiffs, that she would be the first student of the plaintiffs who would have been affected by this. So she would have been immediately affected, and that was what Tammy objected to. And Tammy is essentially a non-believer, and, you know, she felt that if anybody was going to be teaching her daughter about God, that would be her. And it wouldn't be somebody else's version.
And what they were going to do was come in, and of course none of the teachers were going to do this. They were going to have the principal come in and read this statement?
Yes.
That was basically promoting the idea that evolution.
It was telling them that intelligent design is an alternative to evolution, and evolution, of course, is just a theory.
So,
basically teaching children to doubt the validity of what is known as the cornerstone of modern biology.
And so while this was all going on, you were also, you write in your book, The Devil in Dover, very conflicted because you said your family was basically agnostic, but your father wasn't. He was a fundamentalist who owned a Christian radio station.
Yes, yes, yes.
So all of this was playing out in your personal life, too.
It was. And when what bothered me the most was just how deceptive the board members who were promoting intelligent design had been. And for me, I always sort of played along with my belief that I believed more of my father's beliefs because I know his fear. I understand he was worried about me going to hell. And that's a terrible, terrible burden to have to carry. So I'd play along. But he wouldn't say, no, you can't lie for Jesus. And that's really what caused a lot of disagreements between he and I during the trial.
Did you get to meet some of the science teachers who refused to read that absurd statement?
Yes, yes. And as a matter of fact, two of them are preacher's kids.
Really?
Yes, of very devout beliefs. And but they, again, they believe that science is what they need to be teaching their students.
And certainly one of the reporters that was basically accused of lying when he covered this school board meeting and they were talking about creationism and then they denied it.
Yes.
He was very religious, too.
It's amazing the depth, how much faith so many of the people who were not on the side of promoting intelligent design really are. And Joe Maldonado is a wonderful reporter and a man, a Baptist. And, he was pretty much slandered by the school board members.
But the judge did come out for him. I mean, that judge was Judge Jones, who issued this wonderful decision, historic decision, was very concerned about all the lying, wasn't he?
Yes, and he was quite clear in it. He said in his decision that it was the acts of the board members and that their deception that taxpayers and school people in the district deserved more than to be dragged into this legal maelstrom.
And Judge Jones himself is a believing Christian.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Now, what I really loved in your book is your analysis of this idea that journalists have to be objective by balancing everything equally.
Yes.
Which causes a lot of problems with evolution.
Well, it certainly does, especially when you know that the overwhelming body of evidence supports evolutionary theory. And that, and then it's also what even was more painful to me was that the people on the other side were lying. And was I supposed to present people's outright falsehoods as evenly balanced with this overwhelming body of evidence and people who were consistently standing up for truth.
And how can you balance science, evolution, with just fiction? I mean, this is the absurd position that journalists have been put in.
It was terrible. I worked very, very hard to keep everything in context. And when I would write that, you know, this side believes that evolution, you know, is questionable, I would say, however, very, you know, the vast majority of the scientific community, you know,
We're out of time, and yes. It's a great book, The Devil in Dover. We're talking with Lori Lebo, and I'm sure you can get it at all the better bookstores, An Insider Story of Dogma versus Darwin in Small Town America. Thank you so much.
And buy it just in time to celebrate Darwin's 200th birthday on February 12th. Thank you for joining us, listeners, and we want to thank our engineer and producer, Dan Ginsberg. And if you want to hear archives or podcasts of our show, go to our website, ffrf.org/radio.
Thank you for joining us today, and thanks so much to our guest, Lori Lebo, the author of The Devil in Dover. And tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting. And we hope to have the great-great-grandson of Charles Darwin, Matthew Chapman, back on Freethought Radio to help celebrate the big bicentennial birthday bash for Charles Darwin.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.